Well, we're on text 20, canto 9, canto 10, chapter 9, text 20, 10, 9, 20. And this verse and the next verse are the finale of the pastime. Just a little background. The beginning part of this chapter, we'll hear this as we read through the commentary. Beginning part of this chapter is a further response to a question that was asked towards the end of chapter 8. In chapter 8, called The Childhood Pastimes, there's many, many wonderful activities Krishna performed as a child, childhood pastimes. Specific attention goes to Vatsalya Rasa, and keeping it short because of time. The exalted position of Mother Yashoda is getting a lot of attention in chapter 8. The sweet exchanges between those who have parental affection for Krishna in his childhood pastimes, it's very special. And Mother Yashoda is most special amongst the special. So the chapter reaches almost a conclusion with Shukadeva Goswami saying, wow, Mother Yashoda is really special. And Maharaj Parikshit then says, yeah, she's really special. What did she and Nanda Maharaj do in their previous lives to achieve this good fortune, the kind of love that they have? And so a very curious, not so easy to understand explanation comes. That ends the chapter where Drona and Dara are said to be residents of the heavenly realm, and they underwent great austerities. Brahma came, what would you like? We'd like to have the personality of Godhead as our son. Very good. Very soon he will appear on earth in the form of Krishna, so you can become mother and father. So it sounds like it's a post, but then we hear at the beginning of chapter 9, not really. They're partial expansions of Yashoda and Nanda in the spiritual world in the form of demigods, and their partial expansions entered into the eternal Yashoda and Nanda. And then we hear about the eternal Yashoda and Nanda glories. And the glories of Yashoda are particularly getting attention where the Damodar Leela is performed. And the Damodar Leela has ended, and now verses 20 and 21 are summarizing the message. The summary of the message is, she's above everybody. She's above Brahma. She's above Shiva. She's above the goddess of fortune. She's more exalted than all of them. She has received some very special, special mercy. So that's what we're hearing. And the negation, na, comes three times. You know, like kalo nasteva, nasteva, nasteva. This is... this exalted position is not achieved by Brahma, Vishnu, or even the goddess of fortune. Three times, na. That is, she's above them all. It's emphasis, and it's conclusive. So here's text 20, translation. This is Srila Prabhupada. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. And Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is a comparative study. We read this actually Saturday evening. So, nice to hear again. This is a comparative study between Mother Yashoda and other devotees of the Lord. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi 5.142, Ekale Ishara Krishna Arasabhavritya. Prabhupada would quote that a lot in his lectures. The only Supreme Master is Krishna, and all others are his servants. Krishna has the transcendental quality of Britya Vashyata. That was from the previous verse, remember? Britya Vashyata. Britya Vashyata. Britya means servant. Becoming subordinate to his Britya or servant. Now, although everyone is Britya, and although Krishna has the quality of becoming subordinate to his Britya, the position of Mother Yashoda is the greatest. Lord Brahma is Britya, a servant of Krishna, and he is Adikavi, the original creator of this universe. Quoting 111 Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye, that's Brahma, Adikavi. Nonetheless, even he could not obtain such mercy as Mother Yashoda. As for Lord Shiva, he's the topmost Vaishnav. Vaishnavanam yata shambhu. What to speak of Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, is the Lord's constant companion and service, since she always associates with his body. She's on his chest. But even she could not get such mercy. Therefore, Maharaj Prikshit was surprised, thinking, oh, what did Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj do in their previous lives by which they got such great opportunity, the opportunity to be the affectionate father and mother of Krishna? That was chapter 8. In this verse, there are three negative pronouncements. Na, na, na. And when anything is uttered three times, do it, do it, do it, it should understand that this is meant to indicate great stress on a fact. In this verse we find, na lebire, na lebire, na lebire. Yet Mother Yashoda is the supermost, in the supermost exalted position, and thus Krishna has become completely subordinate to her. Paragraph. The word vimuktidat is also significant. Vimuktidat. There's mukti and da. Da means giver, vi means very, and mukti is liberation. There are three different types of liberation, such as sayujya, salokya, sarupya, sharasti, and samipya. But vimukti means special mukti. When, after liberation, one is situated on the platform of prema bhakti, one is said to have achieved vimukti, or special mukti. Therefore, the word na is mentioned. That exalted platform of prema is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as prema pum artho mahan. And Mother Yashoda naturally acts in such an exalted position in loving affairs. She is therefore a nitya siddha devotee. An expansion of Krishna's ladini potency. Remember we read that? She's an Yashoda is an expansion of Radha. Generally, we hear she's Shakti Tattva, she's not Jiva Tattva, but here, even more specifically, which Shakti, the expansion of the Lord Saladini Shakti as potency of to enjoy transcendental bliss through expansions who are special devotees. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavita Abhis Brahma Samhita. Such devotees are not sadhana siddha. That means what was said at the end of chapter 8 is now nullified. Drona and Dara entered into the body of the eternal Yasoda and Nanda, and when Krishna's pastimes are over, their expansions went back to the heavenly realm. Yasoda and Nanda eternally remained as the eternal mother father. Little technology detail. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary, writes, this verse is spoken on seeing the exceptional devotion of the queen of Vraja among all the devotees, which brought Krishna under exceptional control. Vimukti here means Vishesha Mukti, or specialized Mukti, or Prema. Vimukti Da is the giver of Prema, Krishna. So there's what she experienced, and then there's Krishna who gave what she experienced. Vimukti Da, that's Krishna. Giver of Prema to Yasoda. The inconceivable mercy that Yashoda obtained from the giver of Prema, Krishna, was not received by Brahma. One of his names is Virinchi. It was not received by Shiva. Name here in this verse is Bhava. It was not received by goddess Lakshmi, Sri. As the negative statement is repeated three times, it emphasizes the exceeding times three absence of mercy. Or, with the word api, the sentence can also mean that even though they received mercy, it was not to the extent of Yashoda. Brahma is the son of Bhagavan and the Adi Guru of the devotees. Adi Devo Jagatam Paro Guru. Now that phrase, I looked it up. It's Canto 2, Chapter 9, Text 5. In Canto 2, Chapter 9, that's where the Chatrasloki verses appear. Brahma comes before Vishnu. Brahma is asked to ask for benedictions, and he asks some questions, and the answers are given, and that's the Chatrasloki verses. That's Chapter 9. So this is now describing Brahma himself. Adi Devo Jagatam Paro Guru. He's the Adi Guru. Shiva is the topmost Vaishnava. He's considered superior to Brahma. Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Lakshmi, residing in the chest of Vishnu, is superior to Shiva and Brahma, who are the shelters of Sakya and Dasya Ras. Now I spent some time looking to see what does that mean, and I couldn't find out what it means. So don't ask me, because I couldn't find the answer. Brahma and Shiva are the shelters of Sakya and Dasya Ras, but Yashoda is superior to Lakshmi. Therefore, it is wrong to think then that Yashoda is the sadhana siddha who was given a boon in previous lifetime as Drona and Drona, and excuse me, as Dara by Brahma. That's the end of chapter 8. You with me? You with me? You confused? A little bit. Let's go back slowly. Chapter 8. Oh, the elders, and especially Mother Yasoda, and Shukadev says, wow, special. And Maharaj Pariksit says, wow. What austerities did she undergo? That's sadhana. What austerities did she undergo, and Nanda, to have that intimacy of love? And in response, Shukadeva tells the story of Drona and Dara. They're sadhakas. So we should not understand that a sadhaka is who Mother Yashoda is. Rather, we should understand this other way. Partial incarnation, came to this world, entered into by Brahma's boon, entered into the body of the eternal Yashoda, and then went back to their heavenly realm when these pastimes are over. Okay. The prema of Yashoda cannot be attained as a result of Brahma's boon, for Brahma himself prays to become a blade of grass in Braja. Now, we don't say that Brahma is not a pure devotee. We say that Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi, their devotion is pure. However, this attainment of prema is very special. It is something that Krishna gives. It's not something you can go and get or something like that, like earn it, do it, and get it. It's something that Krishna may give, and it's bestowed upon Yashoda, so therefore the mercy that she has received is superlative. And even Brahma himself is not going to give her a benediction to get prema because he doesn't have it. He wants to become a blade of grass in Braja and get dust from some of the residents of Braja. Now, going back to chapter 8, Shukadeva says, "Oh, Parikshit, though you know about Nanda and Yashoda, who are famous in the scriptures as Nitya Siddhas, in answer to your causal question about Nanda and Yashoda's austerities in previous lives, I told you the story of Drona and Dara, who are their small, very small parts." Clear? Okay. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, writes, "Parikshit asked how Nanda attained such a position as the father of Krishna." That was chapter 8. Shukadeva began to illustrate the intimate relationship from the beginning of this chapter by telling the Damodar pastime. Now the true answer is presented in two verses after describing the situation in the previous verse. That was text 19. Brahma is the guru of the devotee. Shiva is a good example of a devotee. Lakshmi is the Lord's eternal consort and takes shelter of his body. The verse says, Anga Samshraya. Samshraya. Anga Samshraya. Sitting on his chest. Takes shelter of his body. But they did not attain mercy in the form of great bhakti, prema bhakti. However, Yashoda, queen of the gopis, received something indescribable from the Lord, who is the giver of liberation. Muktim dadati karhichit sma na bhakti yogam. And that's a reference we're going to hear again. It's Canto 5, Chapter 6. That is, Krishna is the giver of liberation. Generally, the Lord gives liberation. Yashoda attains something unspeakable, explained previously as mercy in the form of the highest prema. Brahma, Shiva, and Lakshmi did not receive this prema. The negative is repeated 3 times for emphasis. Lakshmi was the dearest, thinking that she belonged to the Lord, being situated on his chest. She had possessiveness of the Lord and was obedient to him, but she was filled with knowledge of the greatness of the Lord. The possessiveness of Yashoda was not disturbed by anything else. She thought, quote, "Krishna depends on me. I must see to his welfare alone." That prema was intense. And the mercy was intense. What more can be said? Krishna belonged to her. Such mercy could not be attained by a benediction from Brahma, as stated in the last chapter. Brahma later prays. This is 10:14:34. Quote, "My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth, whatever, in the forests of Gokula and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Supreme Lord Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is still being searched for in the Vedic mantras." Sanatan Goswami. This is explained. This means the question from chapter 8. Even Lakshmi, situated in the Lord's chest, could not control Krishna as Yashoda did. Lakshmi controls only one of the limbs of the Lord, his chest, Anga Sangshaya. Taking shelter of his chest, she did not attract the same mercy, since she could not subjugate him with ropes. Brahma did not attain, Shiva did not attain, Lakshmi did not attain, and some others did attain the same mercy. Although they attained mercy, still Yashoda's attainment of mercy was inconceivable. The Lord gives special mercy, Vaikuntha, to some, Vimuktidat. He who gives liberation to others was bound by Yashoda. It is pretty amazing, isn't it? He gives liberation, she's tying him up. Wow. This shows that he is controlled by his devotee. So now, that's the commentary directly on this verse. And what's next is this verse, the text 20, is mentioned in several commentaries on other portions of the 10th canto, 11th canto. Here's the 11th canto, Krishna speaking to Uddhava. That's Uddhava Gita. Krishna says something very similar. "Neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor even my own self are as dear to me as you are." That's Uddhava. Question, how much dear are the devotees to you? This verse responds, Sridhar Swami says, "Even Brahma, my own son, Shiva arising from my swarup, Lord Sankarshan, my brother, Lakshmi, my wife, and even my own form are not as dear to me as the devotee. However, out of great joy, he praises Uddhava specifically." Get it? It's specifically Uddhava, but it's general, his devotee. Not to say these other personalities are not devotees. It's emphasis upon his devotee. That's the explanation given by Vishwanath. "Though Brahma and others are also devotees, their identity," listen to this, "their identity as a son or an angsa or a brother or a wife is more prominent than their devotee portion." Like the relationship is more important than like the post they hold. "According to the rule that things are designated by predominant qualities, they should be designated as son, angsa, brother, and wife, rather than as devotees. in persons like Nanda and Yashoda, their bhakti portion is much greater than their identity as parents because of the greatness of their prema. Thus, they are called devotees rather than parents. They are dearest to Krishna. He then makes reference to Canto 10, Chapter 11. Dasyangsta viddam lokal atmano bhakta vatsyatam. The Lord displays the attributes of coming under the control of the devotees. In other words, it's the same message as this one. Mother Yashoda's putting Krishna under her control. Thus, they are called devotees, and they bring Krishna under their control. The excellence of Yashoda is praised. That's this evening's verse, text 20. Neither Lord Brahma, nor Lord Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. Krishna is declaring. So this is now Krishna speaking to Uddhava. Back to that verse. Among all these devotees, you are the dearest. Hear this from my mouth. Unquote. Among all the devotees, Uddhava is the best. The gopis, however, are the best of all. Since Uddhava prayed from before the dust from their feet, This is the conclusion of the Vaishnavas. Remember, we had that little question of who's the best of all devotees? The gopis, or Radharani, or Balaram. And the gopis say, no, Govardhan, Haridasa Varya. So it's not like if Haridasa Varya, if Govardhan's the best, that means Radharani is secondary. And the rest of the gopis, they're tertiary, and everybody else is kind of like sitting on the bench. It's not like that. Glorification doesn't mean excluding others' glories. That's the point. So what's going on here is this one verse, text 20, which we heard about from chapter 8, this verse 20 and 21, they're really special verses, setting aside or setting above all others, Mother Yashoda. She's in the spotlight. She's taking bows, and she's getting applause and, you know, all kinds of nice things. Because she has very special prema. And because of her special prema, Krishna does things with her that only she can do. Like bind him with rope. It's very special, very special. So we'll continue. This is now from Canto 10, Chapter 5. What's Chapter 5? It's the ceremony after Krishna's birth. The great-minded Maharaj Nanda gave clothing, ornaments and cows and charity to the cowherd men in order to please Vishnu. And thus, he improved the condition of his own son in all respects. He distributed charity to the Sutas, the Maghadas, the Vandis, and men of all other professions, according to their educational qualifications, and satisfied everyone's desires. Chapter 5. Commentary. He gave cloth and other items such as gold to the cowherd men and women, to the bards, and to the singers and musicians as appropriate. He worshipped them appropriately. He was naturally generous, but now He became most devoted, Mahamanaha. As previously mentioned, because of his devotion to Krishna, his qualities of generosity and wisdom increased immeasurably. He was not satisfied with giving, but whatever they desired, he gave. He worshipped them, according to caste, age, and knowledge. He respected them with garlands, sandalwood, betel nuts, and invitations. The purpose of giving is mentioned. What's that? It is for satisfying Vishnu, not for going to Swarga, since he was the highest Vaishnav and had reached the end of desiring any object. He gave for the welfare of the son, praying, may Vishnu be pleased with this charity. May my son be prosperous by his mercy. By worshipping Vishnu, by that prosperity, there would be manifestation of Krishna's form, qualities, and pastimes in his house. Mahamana can also mean that his meditation became great because of developing attraction to Krishna. Shukadeva indicated Nanda's rare position of getting Krishna as his son. This is established in later verses, so we're going to go to, again, chapter 8 of Canto 10. Oh, learned Brahmana, this is Maharaj Parikshit speaking. Mother Yashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Lord. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? And then this evening's verse, text 20 from chapter 9. Should I read it again? Neither Brahma nor Shiva nor the goddess of fortune received such mercy as Yashoda. Or later, this is spoken by Uddhava, when Uddhava is sent by Krishna from Mathura to Vrindavan with a letter for the gopis. But he first makes a stop at the house of Nanda Yashoda, and he speaks, oh, respectful Nanda, certainly you and Mother Yashoda are the most praiseworthy persons in the entire world, since you have developed such loving attitude toward Narayana, the spiritual master of all living beings. Now he's kind of like blowing it. I mean, he's speaking of Krishna. And they don't see Krishna as Narayana. They smile, and they think he's speaking about their worshipable deity, Narayana, because they just can't see Krishna that way. So I was going to go a little bit further, but I think I'm going to end. Oh, there was just one more section. I'll read one more section. This is, I'll end. Oh, we're good? See if it looks better. I'll end there. So let's do a little summary. So, and we'll continue tomorrow morning with all these nice examples. In general, even in Canto 1, we hear verses that help us get a picture of where the Srimad Bhagavatam is taking us, where, like, let's say, Queen Kunti is speaking about the most exalted kind of love that Mother Yashoda has for Krishna. Because Kunti is like Mother also. I mean, she's not Devaki. She's Devaki's, she's Vasudev's sister. So anyway, so she's like Mother. She's Aunt Kunti. But she's like Mother. And she has motherly affection. But she's much more in the side of understanding Krishna as the personality of Godhead. I mean, she sees him as super soul. That's a little difficult to get your mind around. She's seeing Krishna as a perambulatory super soul. That's a little difficult to kind of, what would that feel like? But that's how she saw. It was easy, that was easy. But she didn't see him as easily as her nephew. But what was totally not comprehensible was the love of Mother DeSoto. And so there's verses to that effect. So already in Canto 1, the point is, and it's in Bhishma's prayers too. So we hear the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan from Canto 1 through to the very end. Then we're hearing in Canto 10 the exalted nature of the residents of Vrindavan. We're hearing far more detail about their exalted love for Krishna and Krishna's special love for them. I mean, when we meet people and engage them in devotional service, and you know, chant Hare Krishna, chant to be happy, and we have some appreciation of the potency of the bhakti process, but even more is, where's this train going when you get on the train? Now, how many persons we know from Bhagavad Gita? It's very few. Manusha nam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye. So persons that are really want spiritual perfection, they do that. It's not just they want relief from distress, that's how you may begin. You know, they want to achieve perfection. Really rare. Really rare. And achieving perfection, that means not just theoretically, notionally accepting that you're spirit soul, but understanding and living that way. That's rare. And then those that know Krishna is more rare amongst those. So we're being given the opportunity for perfection. And the superlative category amongst those who are perfect. So not only love of God, but love of God in its highest form. And you're hearing it again and again and again and again. Because, and there's potency in all of this. It's quite amazing. Quite amazing. I mean, let's just go over here for a minute. When sometimes, you know, when especially we're out in the public doing Harinam Sankirtan, we receive little track from Christian group people that want to, you know, have us become saved. And they have some idea of accept Jesus or you're going to hell, and there's that picture. And if you accept Jesus, and you go to God or go to heaven. And when they have a picture of God, commonly it's either one of two things from what I've seen. It's either Abraham Lincoln in the Lincoln Memorial sitting on a big throne. God's like, you know, passing judgment on everybody. Or it's the old man with a beard and a cloud, and kind of like amorphous-looking features. So there's some idea that God is a person, but it's not at all clear. And we're being given not only God as a person, but there's different stations of God's position in this realm, that realm, that realm. And even in the highest realm, there's the highest amongst the highest realm, and there's the highest amongst the highest amongst the highest realm. The other day, it was Saturday, I believe, was Diwali. There was one of the discussions, one of the three discussions on that day, about Diwali was in different parts of India, different people worship or honor Diwali in a different way. One of those ways was some persons worship Lakshmi on Diwali Day. Now, I didn't get into it, but I'll just a little bit elaboration. According to those who worship Lakshmi on Diwali Day, she appeared from the churning of the milk ocean on Diwali Day. The dark moon night of the month of Kartik is when Goddess Lakshmi appeared. Now, who is that Goddess Lakshmi? It's the material Goddess Lakshmi. Now, so it's a detail. I intend to share this with Shashi Mukhi, who I'm probably not listening to this class, but asked that question. Well, she grew up in Karnataka. That's what they do. And she wanted to know, is it okay to worship Lakshmi? Because it's mentioned. It's mentioned. But it's the material goddess Lakshmi that's being worshipped. And for what purpose? You know, for the things that people want to worship Lakshmi for, material stuff. Wealth and prosperity and good health and all those things. So it's good that people have some idea of worship. It's good that people have some idea of worship. There's a very interesting interview that I never heard before where, I forget who it was exactly, somebody was asking Prabhupada, it's Basu Ghosh. Somebody was asking Prabhupada, there were a group of persons talking about Christianity and Judaism and this and that, and Prabhupada was, after their discussion, they went and asked, Prabhupada, is it better to worship the demigods or the monotheism of monotheistic, the goddess, the monotheistic religions have it today? In that particular occasion, Prabhupada said, better to worship the demigods. Because some explanation like, I don't know, I'm probably not saying it properly, but their idea of God is very confused. Their idea of God is very confused, and they don't follow it anyways. And at least if one worships the demigods in the way that it's prescribed to worship the demigods, it leads to worship of Vishnu. Now, we hear in Bhagavad Gita, of course, something a little different than that. But there's so many ideas out there in the world today. Even though I would imagine, Radha, this little group of kids that you interact with, there's different ideas of God, even in that little group, what to speak of in the world. Different ideas. So many different ideas. So back to the message. We don't have just like an idea. We have scripture that's giving us very clear teachings of the personality of Godhead, what he looks like, what his forms are, what his loving exchanges are, who are the most exalted and intimate in those loving exchanges of different varieties. I mean, there's so much information. I mean, so ask somebody what does God look like, or ask what's heaven like. You're not going to get a lot of understanding. You're not going to get a lot of clarity. Is there a distinction between heaven and the kingdom of God? You're not going to get a lot of clarity. I mean, it's nice that that sentiment is nice. That's godly. It's more than nice. It's godly. But it's also confused and blurred and In one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, I'm getting a little off topic, but in one of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, I forget where it was published, he's giving his understanding of Genesis. And he finds it very incomprehensible. I mean, he describes what the idea in Genesis is. And I think it's a good idea if you read that, then share with your friends. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says about your Genesis. But it's not complimentary. It's very incomprehensible. No intelligent person would accept it. In part, it's no identification of life is resting upon the soul. It's just life comes from matter, and then there's Adam and Eve, and then the tree of knowledge, and God tempts them, and they get punished, and so. But there's no soul. There's no soul in the human form of life in that picture in Genesis. It's not there. When I'm done, I'll forward it to you, or you can circulate it to whoever you want to circulate it to. You probably would be interested to read it. It's Bhaktivinoda Thakur writing on that topic. Because he was brought up, I'm way off topic now, but he was brought up during the time of the British rule, when everything Vedic was backwards and everything European was forwards. And particularly in terms of theism, the Bible was being put forward by the Christian ministers. And it was being taught in schools and so forth. Prabhupada went to a college that was run by Christians, and he learned. And so it was prominent at the time. So he knew. But as a detached, thoughtful person, he found it quite unreasonable. Now, there are things that are within the Vedic literature that somebody that's looking at it with reason and logic might go, really? But there's a science behind it, and the science is resting upon knowledge of transcendence, knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So back to, Canto 10, Chapter 9, Text 20, that we're getting information from Shukadeva Goswami about the elevated nature of Swayam Bhagavan Krishna in Vrindavan and his most exalted devotee Yashoda. And she's above all these other personalities. She's very special. She's very special. There's one little rendering. I didn't mention it during the Govardhan Puja explanation, but here's one picture. That Indra was proud can be considered by Krishna in this way. What? Do you know how exalted are these residents of Vrindavan? They're above all these other personalities, and you want them to worship you? How proud are you? How foolish are you? They're worshipable by all the demigods. They're above all the demigods, and you want them to worship you? You need your pride curbed. So that's one way of dealing with it. Perform a pastime like that to curb the pride of Indra. Another is we hear the descriptions of these pastimes from Srimad Bhagavatam and hear them enough times that gradually it starts to sink in. What's the transcendental knowledge that's being shared with us? And there's potency in these messages to understand it. We're just a little covered. So it takes hearing many times. And once we get it, then we can enter into that level of bhakti. At least the door is open. So let's see if there's some discussion. Radha had her hand up first this time.
I have two questions. My first question is, if Yashoda is an expansion of Radharani, and Radharani is an expansion of Lakshmi Devi?
No, the other way around.
Oh, Lakshmi Devi.
Yes.
So then wouldn't Lakshmi Devi also having the experience of Yashoda, because she's expansive.
There are different categories of expansions. Like all the gopis, they're expansions of Radha also. But the mood of Lakshmi, the consort of Narayan, just as Krishna expands as Narayan, Radha expands as Lakshmi. So there's Lakshmi Narayan, like Rama, Radha's Krishna. But the mood of that Lakshmi towards Narayan is not the same as the mood of Radha towards Krishna, because the Lord is different and the mood of love is different. The mood is different.
Second question is, I heard in Srimad Bhagavatam that Prahlad Maharaj was the greatest devotee.
Yes, he is.
So then is he greater than Yashoda? Or is
it like... If this one's the greatest, then what about that one? And if that one's the greatest, then what about this one? We can say they're all the greatest. In one way, we can say this, that Prahlad Maharaj doesn't have that intimacy of love with the Supreme Lord that Mother Yashoda has. There's something further which she has, which Prahlad doesn't have, that is an intimacy. And that, so that sweetness or intimacy or madhurya is unique to Yashoda compared to Prahlad. But from the Lord's position, speaking, you know, rather from our position, from the Lord's position, that the love of the personality Godhead for his pure devotee is in kind with their love for him. It's special and pure. His love for them is special and pure, corresponding with their love for him. Having said that, he likes Vrindavan. And he likes Vrindavan because of the love of the residents of Vrindavan. He's especially attracted to Vrindavan. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. We're doing our sanitizing thing here.
Raj, this is the first in here.
You're good.
Okay, so this is the first year it happened to me that I born in India, always worship Lakshmi. Not worshiping Lakshmi, it's like you always not complete. And it's first time ever I was out of town and I didn't have Lakshmi Devi, so I didn't worship. So I want to understand the difference that you mentioned between the material Lakshmi and other Lakshmi. Like, what is the difference? And I understand one is for the wealth and prosperity part of it, but I thought there was only one.
There's only one Lakshmi, but she expands herself. And let's do this, something that may help you understand the Lakshmi question. In Vrindavan, the young gopis did a Katyayani Vrata. Katyayani is the name of Durga. One of the names of Durga. So the gopis are not worshipping the material Durga. They're worshipping the original Katyayani, who is of the internal potency, because only the internal potency can grant association with Krishna or union with Krishna or connection with Krishna. The material Katyayani cannot do that. But material Katyayani is an expansion of the internal potency. Or let's do this one. When Krishna summoned Yogamaya and gave her three services, transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to Rohini, 2, take birth as the daughter of Yashoda, 3, you'll come back here to the prison house of Kamsa. Kamsa will try to kill you, but don't worry, you're my internal potency, so he won't be able to. And then after he fails, the next service is you'll go throughout the land and be known by different names, Durga this one, that one. So she, the Durga that's known around the world, is not the Yogamaya potency that arranges Krishna's personal pastimes. She is an expansion. Durga is an expansion of her. And that Durga cannot give love of God. That Durga can do, srishti, striti, pralaya, creation, maintenance, and destruction. And so, she can do things in the material field. She's an expansion of the internal potency. So there's the internal potency aspect, Lakshmi. And there's her expansion for material fortune. And that's what people that worship Lakshmi commonly have the idea. And they don't make the distinction between the two because they just want the material stuff. And so she presents herself according to how she's approached.
Learn something new. This is fantastic. I would have never
finished. Well, let me share something a little further.
Yeah.
That I learned about 6 months ago, 4 months ago, something like that. If you travel in South India, you'll see primarily in the Sri Vaishnava temples, there's the deity of Narayan. And there's also Shri and Bhu, goddesses or consorts. And then over there, there's a separate altar where Lakshmi is worshipped. So I asked, what's all that about? And they said, it's in the Agamas. Agamas is a portion of the Vedas that teaches procedures for worship that Vaishnavas follow. Vaishnava worship. There's non-Vaishnava worship and there's Vaishnava worship. So our worship follows the Agamas, but there's some portions of it we don't follow by our line, Lord Chaitanya's line. So Lord Chaitanya's line places Radha next to Krishna. We don't have a separate. And in addition, Radha Krishna over there is Radha. We don't do that. It's in the Agamas. So when they worship Radha, when they worship Lakshmi in Sri Vaishnav temples, they're not worshiping Shakti without Shaktiman. It's part of the procedure of worship that they're following. They're worshiping Narayan along with the worship of Lakshmi Narayan. But people in different parts of India that worship Lakshmi, they don't have that. They're not following Agamas. They're following, you know, what they're following. She's the goddess of fortune within the material realm who bestows, you know, like the paintings. There comes the gold coins. That's what they want. And they worship her to get some of those gold coins. Prosperity. Material prosperity. Okay, you're getting trained up. Behind you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I have 3 questions if it's okay. I have 3 questions if it is okay.
Get started.
So the first question is in continuation with what Radha asked. If I have understood correctly, Yashoda Mata is an expansion of Radharani.
Doesn't say that. Should I read it again?
Yeah.
She's an expansion of the Ladini Shakti. Now, Ladini Shakti is a category, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Ladini Shakti has expanded both Radharani and...
I don't ask me that question. Because I don't know. There is a potency of the Supreme Lord known as Ladini Shakti. Customarily, thousands of times, we have heard Radha is Krishna's Ladini Shakti. This is the only time I've come across this. So you're drilling, and I don't have an answer. Okay?
That's fine. Sorry about that. And the second question I have is, what I've heard during the lecture is Queen Kunti had the Paramatma realization of Krishna.
Yeah. Well, she understood Krishna in that way. Mm-hmm. She's not just a yogi with Paramatma realization.
Makes sense. So I was wondering, because
she's not just a yogi with Paramatma realization.
Yeah. She had that personal...
she had a personal
relationship.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Maharaj. And the third question is, I've heard in many lectures, you know, the Brahma that we have is a special Brahma. Vyasadev, he is a special Vyasadev. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance is a special appearance for this yuga. So it's like, I see a lot of personalities which are emphasized in their mood as well as in their special appearances, especially in this yuga. Is there any specific reason as such why all those special personalities or special appearances are there in this yuga cycle rather than any other yuga cycles, or we are not aware of the other?
I'm not aware of some parts of what you said. Could you share with me what's special about our Lord Brahma compared to other Lord Brahmas?
I mean, the Brahma Vimohan Leela, I mean, he asking for...
But how do you know it happened in this particular yuga cycle?
Whatever we heard...
How do you know it happened in this particular yuga cycle? Oh, Brahma Vimohan Leela.
Yeah.
Oh. So,
And he asking...
But he got bewildered. What's special about getting bewildered?
No. He asking about being, you know, taking asking for the birth of a Muslim. And, I mean, he's treated as special in terms of...
I think you sometimes start questions by saying, I'm looking for confirmation if my understanding is correct. And I'm hitting the incorrect buzzer.
Okay.
On this one.
Okay. Yeah, thank you.
But, you know, aside from what Brahma, yeah, it's Krishna appears once in a day of Brahma. And when Krishna appears, it's the 27th, according to scripture, 27th yuga cycle of Vaivasvatamanu. And just after Krishna appears, Lord Chaitanya appears. And during this same particular yuga cycle, there's a Vyasadeva in every yuga cycle. In this particular yuga cycle, it's Krishna himself appearing as Vyas. And it's somebody else occupying that post or performing that function or service at the juncture of the Dwarapa and Kali Yuga.
It seems like all of
it's very special. So you want to know why is it very special? Because it's very special. That's why.
Sure, Mother.
Krishna appears. Let's celebrate.
Thank you.
Over here?
Maharaj, this is question again on worship of Goddess Lakshmi.
Okay.
So, like just yesterday was Diwali celebration in Northeast, and then there was worship of Lakshmi.
Oh.
And I recall that when we went to Vrindavan, it was, we heard that, you know, extend the worship of, say, Lord Shiva towards Lord Krishna. So we extend that, looking him as a great Vaishnava. So is there a way that we can extend that understanding of, or can Goddess Lakshmi extend its worship properly to lotus feet of, say, Radharani or Krishna somehow? And can we help others who are worshipping with that understanding?
Let me make sure I'm getting your question the way that you wanted to ask it. Next year, when you have this same event come up at Northeastern, is there some way to connect that Lakshmi Puja function with something that's not just the material Lakshmi worship, and connect it with Lord Narayan, etc.? Is that what you're asking? I guess it depends on your audience, because anything you may attempt to do that even starts to move in that direction, you're likely to have people say, ouch, excuse me, you're stepping on my toes. Now for him, it's easy because he's a Vaishnava. But these other people may not have any sensibility about Vaishnavism. So I don't know your audience.
These are young students, Indian students.
If, so it depends. You know, young students can be pliable, or some young students could go and complain to the director of religious studies or something like that because she stepped on her toes. So you have to be prudent about what you say and what you do. Here's a thought for young people that the ones that are pliable. that they're easy. This ones that are rigid, that's the ones that are. So what you might want to do, this is just, you know, off the top of my head, you might want to say, for your information, in different parts of India, worship is done in different ways. Maybe, you know, a little document that has been researched and says what something like this. In India, worship is done in different ways. On Diwali Day, here's five different options of how people observe Diwali. And then even amongst those who worship Lakshmi, there are different ways that they worship Lakshmi. So you're not disrespecting anybody's anything. You're not pushing anybody away from what they learned when they were kids. And you can say, you know, the Vaishnava perspective looks like this. And they say, wow, she's really, like, she knows her stuff. And, personally, I come from if you'd like to learn something more, I can tell you more about the Vaishnava tradition of worship of Lakshmi. And, you know, keep it simple. You know, in principle, Lakshmi is not worshipped alone. And you can go a little bit further. You can go a little bit further and say that from Ramayana, we know that Shurpanakha, she wanted to enjoy Ram without Sita. And Ravana wanted to enjoy Sita without Ram. And the Vaishnavas want to enjoy Sita with Ram. So we worship Sita, just like, you know, in Vrindavan. It's worship of Radha. But worship of Radha is to approach Krishna. And worship of Lakshmi is to approach Narayan, not separately. Not like, you know, a Ravana-like thing. So one be the enjoyer. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. But, you know, or you can say it in whatever, however you want to say it. If you put it in writing, then it's likely to get circulated, so you might not want to put it in writing. But, you know, say something so people that are thoughtful will hear it, and people that are rigid, they're not going to throw rotten tomatoes at you and go and complain to the director. She's insulting our faith. Anyway, you understand. So there is a document that says, you'd have to give some thought to it, but I'm just saying off the top. Just like I did that last class, I received a document that came right off the internet from somebody, I won't say who did it. And, you know, it was 20% of the five things, two of the five things were bogus, right from the internet, without going into it. So you have something that's a little refined, and next time it's Diwali, you present something, and here's a little something. And then amongst the Lakshmi worship, there's different ways. In different parts of India, they do in different ways. They have a regard, and they do the ritual in a different way. Here's some of those ways. And here's how Vaishnavas perform worship of Lakshmi. And you recite the authority. You know, this is a Sri Vaishnava authority. They do this in their temples. I have that document somewhere. And the person that came up with it was Lal Gopal, because he has some Sri Vaishnava friends. So you can get like a, you know, how do they, you write to Lal Gopal, ask your friends on Diwali, how do they observe, do they have some special festival for Lakshmi on Diwali? And that, you know, that's Sri Vaishnava. And it's not, you know, the material dispenser of wealth, Lakshmi. Not at all. Not at all. And how do they do it? So here's, you know, this is an interesting way. Here's how Vaishnavas do. Maybe invite them. I'm just brainstorming. Invite the people that wanted to do it this year. Please put a little, you know, two, three paragraphs. How does it, when you grew up, how was the Lakshmi Puja done in the parts of India that you're from? Then you're respecting, you're not disrespecting. So here's some of the ideas of this. Here's some other ideas like that. Give some thought to it. I like that particular... Usually we hear that, you know, don't be like Ravana, that you try to enjoy Sita without Ram, or Lakshmi without Narayan. But that you put it the other way too. Shurpanakha wanted to enjoy Ram without Sita. So we don't want either of those. It's ideal from Ramayana, because it's just, you know, it's like saying Bhagavad Gita says, that Ramayana says. It's like authoritative. Whatever goes on over this part and Karnataka and somewhere else, this is a Ramayana reference. And so let's think of a way we can do. How do you feel about where it's both? We're honoring Lakshmi and we're honoring Narayan. Anyway, you give some thought. You have something.
No, I was just wondering. I wanted to acknowledge
her question.
Just a quick 5 minutes. I know you're going
to. Okay, let's do it. Let's do it.
Okay.
Let's do it.
There is one online question.
We don't want to keep our family members waiting, though. Let's do it quickly.
So one question from Girdhar Prabhu. Hare Krishna Maharaj, if a devotee loses his life thinking Vrindavan Vasi's association, does he get their association in Goloka?
If a devotee lives his life getting Vrindavasi association, does he go to Goloka?
No. Leaves his body. Loses
his life. Oh, gives up his body in Vrindavan?
Vrindavan Vasis association. Would that person get that association in Goloka?
Probably. Okay, so let's do the family thing.
I think it's live, or it's live, right? So I think they're just waiting. You want to? Oh, sorry. 5 minutes. Glories of having Bhagavatam at home, significance, and then maybe we could do that.
Is it so? This Bhagavatam or the one at their home?
At their home.
Okay. Yeah, so 5 minutes of what's the importance of having Bhagavatam in your home?
Yeah.
And then?
Then I don't know how to. I mean, Bhagavatam is Krishna, so we don't really install Bhagavatam. But how would you?
We have a little arti.
You know, arti, okay. Yeah.
So incense, lamp, and flower.
Okay.
You have those three things?
I have those three things. Flower, I have jasmine plant.
Okay. So the 5 minutes of the importance of having Srimad Bhagavatam in your home, although I don't know you, I know your family member. And I know he loves Prabhupada's books, and he loves, amongst Prabhupada's books, Srimad Bhagavatam. There are statements, there's abundant statements, not only in the Bhagavatam, but in other portions of the Vedic literature, that stress the importance of having Srimad Bhagavatam in your home. It says that even if you keep Srimad Bhagavatam in your home and you don't read it, but you just keep it on your shelf and respect it, then all auspiciousness comes into your home. It sanctifies your home. Just by having Bhagavatam in your home, it's so special. And its messages are the ripened fruit of the Vedic tree. The Vedas are sometimes compared to a desire tree. The desire tree is a tree that doesn't just provide fruits, let's say apple. In that part of the country, they grow apples. And so an apple tree only supplies apples during a certain season each year. That's an apple tree. And a desire tree produces not only apples or fruits, but anything at any time and without limit. So the Vedas are compared to a desire tree because they teach how necessities of life can be fulfilled and met by various means, by approaching the suppliers of those necessities of life through various formulas and procedures and so forth. So the Vedas are, in that way, a desire tree. They fulfill all desire that one has. And then the ripened fruit of that desire tree is really what the goal of life is. The real goal of life is rare for people to even want to know, but the Bhagavatam very delightfully supplies it. Very gently, very what's a nice word? It's compared to a moon. Soothingly, there's the word. The rays of the sun give lots of light, but they can be very scorching hot, depending upon the season. But the rays of the moon, they're not give the same amount of light, but they're very soothing. So the Bhagavatam is compared to that ripened fruit that gives light like the sun, but the soothingness of the moon. In this dark age of Kali, persons can get light from this Srimad Bhagavatam that's as brilliant as the sun, but as soothing as the moon. And by reading Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, I'll speak from personal experience, your life changes. There's a transformation that takes place from the inside. The world around you continues being the world around you, but how you experience the world around you changes because your consciousness changes, your life changes. It's a life-changing experience. And if someone doesn't read Bhagavatam, they'll never know what that experience is. And someone that reads Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, they'll know what that experience is. It gives a perspective on the world around you and the experiences outside you and inside you in a very different way. It's from the lens of a heart that's been cleansed and seeing things in relation to the ultimate source of everything, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as we were discussing a little bit during the class, not just in a notional way, but in a very, very clear and scientific way, spiritually scientific way, something that's predictable and you do the experiment and there's the observation and there's the conclusion and you can happen again and again for anybody. It's that kind of spiritual scientific way. Very profound, be ready to let your mind expand a little bit. And be cleansed a little bit, and your heart to be softened, and things that are not easy to understand today become natural tomorrow because of that that very powerful effect of Srimad Bhagavatam. So one other thing I like, not only Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified by the Srimad Bhagavatam in these glowing terms, but almost all of the Puranas say something similar. In Padma Purana, for example, it's one of the Puranas in the Mode of Goodness, there's a huge section that's just dedicated to Srimad Bhagavatam. The glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. The glories of Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a whole section of Padma Purana just speaking about this other Purana. The glories of the Mahatmya, Bhagavat Mahatmya, Kanda. Really nice. So we're very fortunate to have received. You're now becoming very fortunate to receive, and make an effort to regularly, ideally is daily read a verse or two or three or some number of pages or something, because it's a large book, many volumes. Read a little bit every day. You'll start to experience what I just described. You'll start to experience the world, experience life in a different way from within. You'll have lots of questions. That's good. Ask questions. Try to understand. Be patient in getting the understanding, because it's not easy to understand. But regularly read and be ready for some internal life-changing experiences. Hare Krishna.